Happy holidays. This is Monica, and this is Remembering the Misremembered. And again, happy holiday, whatever it is you celebrate, or if you celebrate nothing, happy holidays. Anyway, let me just get on into this story. Alan Freed, the man who died for rock and roll. Alan Moondog Freed did not coin the phrase rock and roll any more than he created the musical genre. But he was a fierce promoter and protector of it. His devotion to the music caused his unfortunate demise. During a time when racial segregation was most definitely the order of the day, Freed played a dangerous game as a white man promoting black music to the white masses. Chuck Berry referred to Alan Freed as a brother, and Freed was given credit for co-writing his breakthrough tune, Maybelline, although Freed actually had nothing to do with composing it. The rise of rock and roll in the 1950s was both a blessing and a curse. Whether it was viewed as a problem to be eliminated or the answers to somebody's prayers, the one thing it could not be was ignored. Parents were shaking in their boots. The kids had their own music for the first time, and it was miles away from swing. Alan Freed, who has been called the father of rock and roll, was its most committed minister and its loudest cheerleader. But he's probably best remembered as the dude who indulged in that evil practice of payola. Some people think that he invented payola, and that's not the case at all. Payola is about as old as show business itself, and in Alan Freed's time, it had a tight hold on the radio industry. They were all indulging in it, Alan Freed and the rest of them, but Alan Freed took it for the team and became the payola martyr, while Dick Clark, let's say, went from glory to glory, was a prominent figure for decades with American Bandstand, becoming an industry mogul known as America's oldest teenager. Alan Freed was born Albert James Freed on December 15, 1921 in Winburg, Pennsylvania. His mother was Maud Palmer Freed, and she was of Welsh ancestry. His father, Charles Sidney Freed, was Lithuanian Jewish ancestry. Alan had a younger brother named David. When Alan was still small, the family moved to Salem, Ohio. In high school, Alan played trombone in a band known as the Sultans of Swing. His dream was to be a professional band leader. Alan graduated from Salem High School and he went to Ohio State University, initially planning to study mechanical engineering. He left school to join the Army Signal Corps in 1940. He served as a photographer, and he worked for WKBN Armed Forces Radio as a DJ. In Youngstown, Ohio, he dabbled in sportscasting, too. During his time in the Army, he contracted double mastoiditis. That, along with his bad legs and feet, forced him to be discharged after just 8 months. In 1943, Alan married his first wife, Betty Lou, with whom he would go on to have two children, Alana and Lance. Alan Freed dove headlong into his broadcast career, first being told that he would never make it because of his Midwestern dialect. But he found work at various stations in the Pennsylvania and Ohio areas. In 1945, Alan worked at a radio station in Akron, Ohio, where he played the latest in jazz and pop. A non-compete clause, or covenant not to compete, limited his options as far as finding work, so he took what he could get, a graveyard shift gig. It was somewhere around this time that he divorced his first wife, Betty Lou, and married his second wife, Marjorie, with whom he would have two more children, Siglinde and Alan Jr. He got a huge opportunity upon meeting the owner of one of Cleveland's largest record stores. The record store was Record Rendezvous, and its owner was named Leo Mintz. When Alan Freed started working at Akron, Ohio's WAKR, Mintz spoke with him about how the rhythm and blues records that he sold in his shop were flying off the shelves. It was the hottest thing. Alan needed to seriously consider playing this music on his radio program. Leo Mintz bought airtime on WJW, a Cleveland station. Freed was released from his non-compete clause, so he was able to host a program on this R&B station. Alan Freed's program debuted in July of 1951. He adopted a hip on-air persona. The show was called The Moondog Show, and Allen called himself the king of the Moondoggers. This was inspired by the Moondog Symphony, the instrumental that blind street musician Louis T. Hardin recorded. Hardin was known professionally as Moondog, in honor of his dog, which howled at the moon. As a result of his work on the Moondog Show, the popularity of Alan Freed soared. He started receiving sacks and sacks of fan mail and music requests on the daily. Alan hosted the Moondog Coronation Ball at the Cleveland Arena on March 21, 1952. This was the first such gathering of its time, a rock concert that was also a dance. Alan Freed had a huge black following because he played black music, but this concert and ball proved that he was also gaining a substantial white following too. The arena was filled to capacity, but people were still trying to get inside. When the arena's gates were closed to them, violence ensued. 6,000 or 7,000 people who had no tickets and couldn't purchase tickets crashed the gates. The following night, Alan Freed took to the airwaves, apologizing for what had gone wrong and requesting that his listeners continue sending in their requests, cards, telegrams, and phone calls of support. He promised that people with tickets to the next concert would have dibs on the best seats the venue had to offer. Rhythm and blues became rock and roll. This distinction caused a breaking down of racial barriers. Alan Freed had American teenagers in the palm of his hands, many of whom thought of him as a cool father figure. One testament to the popularity and power of Alan Freed was the fact that the show he hosted from Cleveland for 5 years led to a new gig at New York's WINS hosting their nighttime program. Alan Freed and his Moondog Show grew by leaps and bounds. WINS had not been a success before Alan Freed came to serve as host. With this success, Alan became even more influential. His name and face were so synonymous with rock and roll and with black music that he became a threat to the well-heeled status quo. After all, Life magazine would credit him as being the creator of the rock and roll craze. Schools and churches were very much against the music and the impact that it had on the youth. They were singing it, dancing to it, and white kids were wanting to commiserate with black kids, and this was considered dangerous. This so-called dangerous music was luring the kids away from traditional values. It was causing them to question what they had been taught by their parents and by society, and they were becoming rebellious. Parents were preaching to their kids against Alan Freed and the sinful music that he was pushing, and his name probably was condemned in church pulpits on Sunday mornings. Some adults saw Freed as a kind of Pied Piper, leading the kiddies into disrepute. As far as he was concerned, he was simply representing the youth and not leading them into anything. Concerts, dances, radio programs, he hosted and promoted them all. These shows helped to create rock and roll legends like the Dells, Jesse Belvin, Jackie Wilson, Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers, Buddy Holly, Bill Haley and the Comets, and the Moonglows, to name a few, making it possible for young people to see these acts up close and personal. Freed also appeared in a number of films devoted to rock and roll as himself, including Go Johnny Go, which featured Chuck Berry, Mr. Rock and Roll, and Don't Knock the Rock with Bill Haley and the Comets. This meant that Alan Freed was a very busy man in these years. In addition to his disc jockey duties at WINS, he regularly promoted shows all over New York City, and he was the host of a weekly rock and roll TV show for CBS, Rock and Roll Dance Party, with Count Basie and his orchestra. He could be seen in person at the Brooklyn Paramount hosting shows. He became as popular as the acts he pushed. He experienced trouble when he hosted a 17-act show in Boston featuring Chuck Berry, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Frankie Lyman. There was a lot of electricity in the air with 5,000 overly excited fans in attendance. The show went well early on, but kids rushed the stage at one point. The police kept disrupting the show while Jerry Lee Lewis was performing, and later when Chuck Berry was closing it out. Alan tried to calm the kids down, urging them to remain in their seats. The police presence, 20 strong, seemed to make the wild atmosphere worse because they were determined to lead the audience in a different direction than what Alan requested. Alan was heard saying, "Well, kids, it looks like the Boston PD doesn't want you to have any fun," or something to that effect. The kids started rioting inside the venue with chairs being thrown. Outside the venue, after the show, some rowdy teens were alleged to have stabbed a sailor, and other people were beaten and robbed. There were also reports of rapes, and some people blamed it on gang activity. According to the manager of Chuck Berry, when he exited the arena about 30 minutes after the show ended, the streets were close to empty, which sounds inconsistent with a full-scale riot. Also, it's important to stress that the show's arena, according to articles that I've read, was in a sketchy area where criminal activity was pretty commonplace, and the police might have gone out of their way to blame crimes in the area that took place that night on Rock and Roll and Alan Freed. There were only two arrests, though. After Alan made the remark about the police not wanting the kids to have any fun, he was indicted for inciting a riot. He faced the possibility of going to jail. He quit his job at WINS, knowing full well that the station viewed him as a liability. He promised his listeners that this was, quote, not goodbye, just good night, and the charges against Alan were dropped due to insufficient evidence. He promised to rock on and took a job with WABC. He hosted a dance show called The Big Beat. It was canceled after Frankie Lyman danced with a white girl on the air. Soon, it was found that Alan Freed had accepted payola, or payment, from record companies in order to play certain records. This was a controversial practice, considered unethical, but not illegal at the time. There was a congressional hearing about it with clean-cut and charming Dick Clark testifying, while clearly agitated and haggard. Freed opted to plead the fifth. Freed initially denied participating in payola, claiming that he merely acted as a consultant for record companies, but eventually admitted to indulging in the practice. He was accused of taking credit for co-writing songs that he did not write and giving preferential attention to playing those records, songs like Chuck Berry's Maybelline, which represented a conflict of interest because he would be due royalties when the songs were played. Harvey Fuqua of the Moonglows said that Alan Freed really did co-write sincerely, but this still would be an example of a conflict of interest. The Flamingos accused Freed of taking credit for some of their songs, which he did not write, and Chuck Berry eventually retained songwriting credit for Maybelline. Alan Freed's employment was terminated from WABC-AM when he refused to sign an FCC statement saying that he never took bribes. Payola was officially outlawed in 1960, and Freed was charged with commercial bribery on various counts and pleaded guilty to two counts. He got a suspended prison sentence and a $300 fine in 1962. The career of Alan Freed never actually recovered. He worked for different stations across the country, but was never the big deal that he had once been. In fact, he was a broken man. He had taken a job at K-Day, a Los Angeles-based station owned by the same company that owned WINS. He was only with K-Day for about a year. In 1964, he was indicted by a federal grand jury for not paying his taxes. They said that he owed $38,000 in taxes, which he couldn't afford to pay. He had gotten divorced from his second wife and married his third wife, Inga, in 1959. They remained married for the rest of his life, a life that ended in Palm Springs, California on January 20th, 1965. The cause was uremia and cirrhosis of the liver due to his chronic alcoholism. He was only 43 years old. In 1986, Alan Freed was a part of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's first class. In 1988, he was inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame. In 1991, he received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and he has been portrayed in numerous movies, too. His legacy is that he promoted black rhythm and blues on the radio and called it rock and roll. He didn't really go down for payola. Payola was just an excuse, and not illegal when he indulged in it. He went down for committing the crime of bringing people together. As far as some closing facts, I saw some flyers announcing the Alan Freed School of Radio, Television, and Broadcasting, but I don't know anything about the school, when or if it opened, or for how long. When Alan Freed worked for WAKR in Akron, Ohio, the star disc jockey became known as the Old Knucklehead. Alan left WAKR in 1950 and hosted one program on WADC, a competing channel which was against the rules of non-compete. The station's owner sued Freed in order to enforce the clause. Freed repeatedly tried to appeal, always losing, even when the case made it all the way to Ohio Supreme Court. Louis T. Hardin sued Alan Freed in 1956 for his use of the name Moondog. Hardin had been using the name since 1947, under which he composed music. Hardin won a $6,000 judgment against Freed, who gave up using the name Moondog. Alan Freed's ashes were evicted from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame site in 2014 and given to his family. But anyway, that is the story of the man who popularized the term rock and roll, who was a real champion of the music, brought people together, ended up losing everything, paying the ultimate price. But anyway, this is my last episode of 2023. Again, I wish everybody Happy New Year, Happy Holiday, whatever you want to call it, Christmas, Saturnalia, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Boxing Day, etc. Enjoy this time. I'll see you in the new year. This is Monica. This is Remembering the Misremembered. See you later.